Welcome to our Two Posh Podcast. I'm Gabrielle. I'm your host here with my daughter, Marcella.
Hello.
Bernie.
Hello.
Spider behind me. And our amazing guests are back, Colleen Michaelis and James McClanahan. These two amazing parents of Tommy McClanahan. Please listen to the show before this one. It gives you a dad's point of view.
It's amazing, amazing, amazing show. Definitely well worth a listen to.
And Colleen was on episode 77 and 78. Mm-hmm. So she came on less than 3 months after Tommy passed away from an accidental drug overdose. And you can hear so much more about all of it. And they are so brave and I'm so proud of them. And this hour, we're going to talk about the organization Shatterproof and everything that Colleen and James are doing to bring awareness and the changes that are being made with this opioid crisis in this country. And I want to just turn it over to you and you tell us everything that is happening and that you're doing. And James, jump in anytime.
Yes, for sure.
I do about 10% of the talking.
So last year, November 1st, we had this podcast. It was the first time that I spoke to anyone. About 2 weeks before that, I had heard about Shatterproof and their organization and Gary Mendel, who started it. He lost his son to addiction. And I mean, just in the last 5 years, that particular organization has grown and grown and grown into a national force. I mean, they're in Washington, D.C. lobbying for laws. They're all over the place. You probably have even more details on because you kind of like to get into those kind of details. But anyway, just an amazing organization.
So how long ago did he lose his son?
I think 5 years ago.
And then he started that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yes. And 5 or 6 years ago. And his whole point of what he went through with his son and what, you know, so many people do is his son had a best friend and grew up with this best friend. And the best friend had cancer at around the same time that his son had an addiction. And, you know, one thing he noticed was how everybody was supporting that other family, but everybody was staying away from his. And he was like, something has got to be done about ending the stigma because families who are dealing with addiction need help and support as well. And people who are addicted need access to research-based good treatment, whether they can afford it or not. And so Shatterproof is that organization. They're just amazing. And last year, I found out about them, again, like maybe the second week in October, first or second week in October. And I have a running club at my school. And so we run a 5K every month. And so I asked the other coaches, you know, is it okay if we run, we usually run in the pumpkin spice in November, you know, and I said, is it okay if we run in Shatterproof? It'll give me an opportunity to talk to the fourth and fifth graders about addiction. And they all knew Tommy too, because he used to come in the gym and help me out and everything from time to time. So, you know, they all agreed. So I kind of wrote a letter to the parents from the running club on why we were doing Shatterproof and what the point was and what I'd be talking to their kids about. And so they all jumped on board. And they were like, well, we want to go down, you know, we want to all be there as families. And then the teacher started saying, well, we want to do it. And then one teacher was like, well, we need to get shirts printed up, you know, Team Tommy shirts. And I was like, oh my gosh, okay. And it snowballed to in 4.5 weeks, we raised almost $11,000 for Shatterproof. We were the second largest fundraiser at Shatterproof Dallas. And we had the most people out there. We had almost 80 people out there in Team Tommy shirts. So it was really, wow, really impressive. And the one team ahead of us was a corporate team. So I like to say, you know, we were all like $25 here, $50 here. You know, that's how we raised money. But they had a bunch of corporate stuff. But it doesn't matter. It all goes to an amazing cause. So this year, we're going to do it again. It's on November 16th and in Dallas, down at Trinity Grove and where the Big White Bridge is.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, hopefully it's a beautiful day like it was last year, because it just, I mean, that was kind of the icing on the cake to a really, really successful event. And one of the things that they do down there is they have speakers. So not only did Gary speak, but then they have some people who have lost loved ones speak, and then some people who are in recovery speak. And, you know, when you talk about the impact that it had on kids, it actually prompted several of our fifth graders to do their exhibition, their end of year fifth grade project on addiction. And wow, it was really, really amazing to see, and just how passionate they got about it. So, so you know, we are spreading the word, you know, in little bits and pieces. And then last year, after I left you, November 7th, today, a year ago today, I actually, some of the things that I posted, remember last year we talked about Dope Sick with Beth
yes.
Macy. And so some of the things that I had posted that I learned through that book prompted parents at my school to do a book club on that book. And they invited me on November 7th last year to come and speak to them at their book club. And so, you know, we talked about this a little bit in the first segment, but like none of them knew the link from hydrocodone to heroin, you know, none of them. And
didn't you, Marcel, you were teaching at the studio in Coppell and someone there was reading the book because
yes.
of,
oh, yes. yes. Yep. Uh-huh. Yep. And yes.
Mom, who listens to our show.
Yes.
Pulled me aside and said that they wanted me to tell you that because of what you had spoken about, that they were actually, they got it because of the show.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I mean, just even, you know, there's that group and how that's going to affect their children. And then I was interviewed, you know, I was, the whole Han Gill Hotel thing came out. And I don't want to get into a whole big spiel on that because that's been done. But the Dallas Morning News reached out to me, and I can't remember exactly how they got my name, but they reached out to me. You know, Tommy was in Austin when they raided the Han Gill Hotel. And as far as we know, Tommy...
Tell us a little bit what that is about, just so that our listeners know.
Okay, so the
I've never...
I spoke that. In the first segment about Rick Calvert, who came out, the mm-hmm. federal prosecutor who mm-hmm. came out. So he came out to speak to everybody in Coppell, and he started off talking about, you know, this awful hotel that's 15 miles away. And, you know, you could tell people in the audience are like, so what does that have to do with us? You know? And so it's in Dallas and it's awful. And it was built in the 1960s. It was originally a nursing home. So the doors were to the inside, like a hotel. I mean, like a nursing home would be, not like the little no-to motels that the police are usually have surveillance on that have the doors to the outside. So a lot could happen in there that couldn't necessarily be detected from the street or cameras from light posts and stuff. Yeah. So anyway, in this hotel, it was basically run almost like a flea market of drugs and other things. You could pretty much get anything you wanted in there, and you can go into one room and get heroin. If you didn't like their heroin, you could go down three doors and get it for a better price. You could get cocaine in there. There was sex trafficking in there.
I've heard a lot of stuff in my life. I've never heard anything like this.
Yeah.
You know,
so
if you go back and Google that, like the Dallas Morning News did a lot of good reporting on it.
Wow.
And, yeah. There was one guy that the owner kind of rented the space out to, you know, these drug dealers and the whole thing. And yeah, some of the stories are just...
Yeah, I mean, like,
that is
just
crazy.
The torture that went on, and if someone OD'd, they would just, like, take them out and throw their body somewhere. I mean, it was just it's an awful, awful thing, and you like to think that kids from Coppell would never walk in a place like that.
But we should say, we don't have any... I don't think Tommy was ever there.
No, that's what I was going to say before.
There's somehow, at one point, one of the local papers sort of tried to connect Tommy to it, kind of... wasn't accurate, but the story is important to get out, and it's just another kind of example of how just destructive and awful, you know.
Mm-hmm. Because these are all young people.
Absolutely.
Going to
right.
this. Yeah. Scary. It sounds like a...
And they were really, I mean, there were stories nightmare. About, you know, someone would die in there, and they would roll them up in the carpet and then take them out and just throw the body somewhere.
Well, probably because they're scared. Is that the typical...
Well,
the answer is that they're afraid to get in trouble, so they.
Well,
don't.
Certainly, if you're the drug dealer there who's you know selling stuff, you don't want to draw the attention to it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So anyway, they in March went in and raided the place, and you know, since then it's been shut down, and just recently, just in the last 2 weeks or so, the owner of the Han Gill and that head drug dealer both got sentenced to 30 years in prison, which it should be more, but the owner's gonna die in prison because he's older.
Oh,
and I don't know about the other guy, but
do they say how long that had been going on, the hotel? I mean, that gone on for years? Do they have any idea about it?
I don't know. That's a good question.
The reason it went under surveillance, it was not being investigated at all. The reason it went under surveillance is because the Coppell police contacted Mr. Calvert's office because three kids had died that spring of a overdose, and all three kids, the drugs were, one kid died at the Hongil Hotel, and another one, the drugs were traced back to the Hongil Hotel.
Oh.
And
you said in the earlier show, what was the percentage of license plates?
So there were three kids from Coppell, graduated from Coppell High School, that had died due to drugs purchased there. There were two kids that had graduated from Coppell High School that were actually dealing drugs out of there. And there were, and when they raided the place, Mr. Calvert said that 80% of the cars outside. Now, I started thinking about that, 80%. I mean, you could have three cars out there, two or, you know, but still, 80% is 80, one car is too much. But they said that 80% of the license plates were registered to Coppell. So, you know, and when he talked to the kids, he asked the kids, you know, have any of you ever heard of this hotel? And, you know, several of them raised their hands. So
really?
So anyway, it's an awful thing. And he went on to talk about, so he talked about the hotel. Then he went on to talk about, you know, there were these kids that died there. And still people were saying, well, what does that have to do with us? Well, then he dropped the bombshell and said, the reason I'm even telling you about this hotel is because those kids that I'm telling you about all graduated from Coppell High School. And so he went on to give a very, very, very good informative talk also on drugs and what we talked about in the early segment about them being laced with things and all that. It was a really, really, really good presentation that was not sugarcoated. You know, most of the time those are sugarcoated. And I was very proud of our district for inviting him in and allowing him to tell that story. And let me tell you, it made people uncomfortable. I mean, you know, the district got a lot of backlash and
They did.
They got some backlash. They got a lot of praise, but they got a lot of backlash too from parents that were like, well, now my kids know, you know, where to get drugs, or now my kids, well, no, they're armed with the knowledge of where to stay away from, you know? So
as if they're going to have a hard time finding where to get drugs. Well,
right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So anyway, I was super proud of our district for that. And shortly thereafter, actually Brad, in that letter we talked about in the first segment, he actually embedded a link to the Dallas Morning News article that I'd been interviewed for, which was impressive as well. You know, that, that he even let everybody know about that and that hotel. And anyway, throughout the year, I've talked to the lacrosse team. I've spoken several times to kids who are in our DEAP program that may have made a mistake. It's not going to end their lives, but you know, they have, it's like a not alternative school, but it's like they have to go to a different school for a couple weeks and they go through this program, which this started just last year as well, where every Tuesday night they have to go and there are different speakers and stuff. And so my segment actually takes place at the cemetery. And so it's very, very moving. And the director of the cemetery talks a lot about, you know, getting the phone call from parents and all that kind of stuff. And then I go through and I speak to them, to the parents and the kids. You know, you have to kind of fine tune for what audience you're speaking to. But I talk to them a lot about how, you know, Tommy started doing drugs, what his background was like, and how we as parents let that greatness that we talk about overshadow some of the idiotic things he was doing. And, you know, also are being naive about how you think that you get them help and boom, they're done. You know, so they're done with drugs and they're going to move on and it won't be an issue anymore. So, there's a gal in town whose kids go to my school who she has a little, it's called the Bright Muse, and it's a little...
I saw it.
Yeah, yeah. And so she interviewed me, and then Michael Moulton from M2 The Rock, we got connected through the Dallas Morning News article, actually. And what was super interesting about that is that, I don't think anymore they are, but at the time, Recovery Unplugged was a sponsor of his. And so that was like really cool that, oh, wow. you know, we went up. Yeah. And so we immediately had a connection and we talked about Team Tommy. And so that was in April that I got interviewed by him. And I talked to him about how my principal was wanting to do Team Tommy Day on May 10th, which would have been the 10th anniversary of Tommy's death. And, you know, he said, hey, I want to be a part of it. Let me be a part of it. And I was like, okay. And so then we got closer to it and I'm like, I'm going to hold him to that. So it was amazing. He came out the week before that day. So people who had done the Shatterproof run and stuff had their Team Tommy shirts. So then a couple weeks before that, we put it out there for to purchase the Team Tommy shirt for $20, and $5 of every shirt went to Face the Music, which on a lesser level is much like Shatterproof, but it's under the Recovery Unplugged umbrella. And Tommy was involved in that, and they provide scholarships for research-based treatment.
Well, so for the, you know, for people that are in treatment that either the insurance stops or they can't afford to go any longer, it's kind of like a scholarship program that, you know, people donate to that, and they use that money to keep them in treatment. And so Tommy was very, you know, I think one of the things he recognized that our family was fortunate in the standpoint that we could afford the treatment, and there were so many other kids there, people there that couldn't. And he used to talk to me all the time about, you know, I feel so bad about such and such that, you know, I don't know how he's going to be able to continue, and he needs it. And so, you know, it was a good cause.
So that's a great point and a good question. My question, so obviously we know it's not inexpensive. It's very expensive to do this treatment. What if someone who can't afford, I mean, the treatments, and I know we're talking about the scholarship and all that, but I mean, you can't obviously scholarship every single person.
Right.
So what are the options for someone who is truly struggling, who wants the help, but doesn't have the resources to do something like that? I mean, are they SOL?
Kind of. I mean, for a lot of them, the problem is that you can't just go to detox for 10 days and walk out and be okay.
Sure.
You know, I mean, a lot of what comes with the treatment is counseling and group therapy and, you know, learning how to manage your life. Because what has happened when you're addicted, your life has become unmanageable, right? So, you know, it's almost like giving life skills back, you know, learning how to manage your life. And, you know, we've seen it happen. You know, you've got kids that go for 10 days or something, and it just doesn't work.
It's a great question. And I, you know, there are probably varying degrees of treatment, you know, that you can kind of source. And then at the same time, I think, you know, hopefully at least looking forward, you know, we talk about all the lawsuits that all these counties have now against the opioid manufacturers. One of the big areas that, you know, I mean, these are billion, you know, with a B, settlements going on. And a big part of that, I think, is for treatment, you know, to set up treatment in some of these counties. So hopefully that will kind of filter through. But at this point, you know, it's to a certain degree too, it's you get what you pay for, you know, and you know, it takes a lot to get through this. And so some of the lesser programs, again, I'm not an expert, but probably not as effective as others.
Well, I think while we were talking, I was thinking, here's Tommy. He asked for help. Mm-hmm. He said he couldn't do it, and you put him in a great treatment. So I know of several people that like force their people in treatment, and then it usually doesn't work at all. And then you had a son that actually asked for it, and it's just so devastating.
Right.
But it goes just, I was asking Marcella for a phone because I was trying to look up. There was that Dr. Joel Smithers. Did you hear about him?
Dr. Joel Smith?
Joel Smithers. This just recently came out on the 2nd. So this doctor was a Virginia doctor. And
I did hear about that.
40 years prison sentence for prescribing 500,000 doses of opioids.
Yeah.
And it just goes into the whole perspective of just like these companies.
But it's not, that's not even enough.
But it's staggering.
One doctor. That's just one that we know of.
Right.
And so it's, I mean, man, that's crazy.
And I do know on the the subject of people being busted too. There have been, there is a trend now too for the actual drug dealer. Like if somebody dies of an overdose, that the actual drug dealer is being charged with manslaughter now. And there was outside of Austin in Westlake, not Westlake here, but Westlake in Austin, two kids died of fentanyl taking a fentanyl laced pill, and they found the drug dealers and they put him in jail for 14 years. But
they had that rapper, and I'm not big into the whole hip hop scene, but I was kind of wowed. There was a rapper named Mac Miller. And he, his drug dealer was found guilty, or they going after him. And then, it's just like, that was crazy. That first, when I heard that, I was like, man, how do they even know to go back to this person or whatnot? But it's encouraging at best at this particular point, that at least people are slowly starting to be held accountable. Because what ends up happening is those dealers and those doctors are not thinking about the family. They're not thinking about the other people that are impacted by the sale of something, and you know, the aftermath of unfortunate events like, you know, an overdose, and who's left to pick up those pieces. So it's, like I said, in a small way, it's encouraging at least to see that people are starting to pay for that, the stuff that they're putting on people that don't deserve it or unwilling or unknowingly through it.
Mm-hmm.
The newest article I just found, and I wanted you to know, I don't know if you heard about it, this was just came out last Thursday, is that meth 2.0 is killing Americans faster than opioids and ravaging our country, basically. It's called a new, more powerful and deadly
methamphetamine.
Thank you. Called meth 2.0 has taken hold in the United States because of its potency, cheap price, and accessibility. It's a whole entire article. We figure out maybe one thing to get better, and then there's something new.
Right.
It's like I don't even know.
Well, and it's, you know, we're talking about shatterproof and kind of what Colleen's doing, and you. At one point, you look and you think, you know, God, it's, you know, last year we raised about $11,000, and you think it's just so little against such a massive problem. But you know, the beauty of Shatterproof is that it's, you know, it's across the country, and it's at that, you know, that level all the way through, and then you couple that with what what law enforcement's doing to try to, you know, attack these things now. And frankly, the business community, you know, really going after, the opioid manufacturers and all that, you know, it's a huge, huge problem, but there's a lot of points now attacking it. And so hopefully.
And they do say like every little piece, when it connects together, it can hopefully work. But I also wanted to talk about the movie Beautiful Boy.
Okay, so
I watched that.
Yeah,
did you go see it?
So yes, I did. So last time I was here,
you went to see it.
I have not heard of it.
You talked about it. I only saw the previews, and my mind was absolutely blown that you could actually.
I don't think James could go see it.
There is zero chance that I could get through that.
Well, I can't even go see it.
Reminded me, the trailer alone reminded me so much of James and Tommy that it just brings tears to my eyes to think about it. But so when Tommy was in eighth grade, we did a parent-student book study, and you got to pick from like 30 books, and we picked Beautiful Boy. And so we read that book together when he was in eighth grade and talked about it and did a project on it and everything.
Bernie, what is it?
Yeah, what is it?
So Beautiful Boy was written by a man called David Sheff, and it chronicles him dealing with his son, who is addicted actually primarily to methamphetamines. And his son is Nick Sheff. And so we read Beautiful Boy, and then Nick wrote the book Tweak, that book is from the same time period, but from the son's point of view. So they put those two books together to make the movie Beautiful Boy.
Very intense movie.
Wow. It's a very intense movie. You know, it's interesting because they touch on so many different things that, yes, that was awful, but that was awful like 250,000 times, it seemed like, you know, but they show it once, but they can't show it 200, you know, but it just, everything that they showed was very, very, it was a very well done movie.
Mm-hmm.
And And so I, on that note, through Michael Moulton and M2 The Rock, I was invited to a luncheon where Nick Sheff, beautiful boy, was speaking, and actually got to hang out in the VIP section where Michael was interviewing Nick, and then had a couple minutes with him and was able to speak to him and everything. It was very, very moving. And I told him our story about Tommy and kind of what my mission is. And we talked about his book, High. So is now a good time to talk about this? Okay. So last time I came, I had Dope Sick with me. This time it's this book, High. And this book I read over the summer, and it's geared to, I tried to read it through the lens of like a 12 or 13 year old, and then also through the lens of parents. But I think that every parent and child should have this, and it probably should be read around 12 or 13. But it says, this book isn't full of cut and dried easy answers, because there are none, like we said earlier. This book isn't going to tell you what to do, because no one else is in your shoes. This book isn't going to tell you just say no. This book wants you to just say no, K-N-O-W. High provides factual, reliable information on drugs, alcohol, and addiction, so you can make educated decisions for yourself. High discusses the risks of experimenting, so you don't have to rely on rumors, uses research, interviews, and testimonials to give you a glimpse of what drug and alcohol use really looks like. So the thought is, and this was my thought also, and what I've been trying to do, is that if we educate kids, then they're going to be armed with information when they're faced with that decision. Yeah. When we say just say no to drugs, and they're faced with doing drugs, they're not sure, wait, is this the drugs they were talking about? I don't know, because I've known this kid for 5 years and he's one of my best friends. Why would he do me wrong? Is this what they were talking about? I'm not even sure what this looks like. I mean, I've seen smoking marijuana, but I don't even know about, you know, and it just, they're not educated, you know? And how do we throw our kids into that, you know, into that situation without arming them with the information? So, I mean, what they have to do to get a driver's license is insane, you know, like all the classes they have to go to, and they have to learn this and that and this other to get a driver's license. So we arm them with that knowledge. We need to arm them with this knowledge, because, you know, chances that your kid will never be faced with making a tough decision or making the right decision, even if it's the hard decision, is zero. You know, so anyway, this book is, I'm taking this book with me to our social emotional wellness committee meeting at 4:00. And I'm hoping, I'm going to big push for our district to possibly adopt it for, you know, as a mandatory reading, maybe.
Oh my gosh, I want to go bring that. I have a 15 year old and she's in a performing arts school, and I want to bring that book to them for them to make them read it.
So yeah,
everyone,
you know,
needs to read it.
Like I said, I was reading it through the lens of like a eighth grader, and then, or seventh grader, and then also parent. And there's some stuff in here the parents are going to go, I don't want my kid to know that.
But
they just are, because it's uncomfortable, you know? And so, but it's really, really good stuff for them to know. And honestly, I don't think most parents know what's in this book.
Right.
You know, so it's good for the parents to read it, maybe read with their kid.
I just said this in the car, that I work with children a lot, and I have for a lot of years. And I think that for parents, I know that the idea is that you don't want them to know certain things, but to think that they don't know things that are X-rated, drug-related, inappropriate for their age, man. I promise you they know more than you think.
Right.
Some stuff that comes out of this, little knuckleheads. And I'm like, where'd you learn that from?
Some stuff at the studio that they would tell me, I was like, oh my God, what? That blows my mind that you know all of these things. So I think to be the parent, to read something like that with your child is the best thing to do, even though it might seem uncomfortable, but they do know a lot more. With kids with drugs, especially if they're friends, it's like, well, yeah, we all smoke weed, it's not a big deal, or this is not a big deal, we're gonna smoke weed but we're not gonna do heroin, like, they just make it so not a big deal.
Nobody smokes pot and thinks they're ever gonna do heroin. I mean, nobody thinks they're you know, I mean, they just don't. But that's a process. But well, one thing about that they talked about as far as the heroin thing goes too is that back in the 60s, it was recreational. It was a lot more recreational back in the 60s. And we have like lifelong heroin users. They have used heroin ever since then. And they function and they know how much to take and give themselves so that they can function. But now 97% of new heroin users started with a prescription medication. Mm. So either prescribed
97%?
To them. 97%? Yeah, either prescribed to them or taken from a friend or a medicine cabinet from somewhere. Yeah. So, that's a big swing. It's not really recreational anymore. People are doing it because they're sick.
Right.
So. Man, that's unbelievable. That's
and their
crazy,
faces
man.
Look completely different than they did back then.
Right.
Because they are like Tommy. Yeah. Right. Handsome, charming.
Well, and then the problem is with fentanyl and all the, whatever these new, more powerful deals, they don't, I think people think they can, kind of do the right dosage, if you will. But if you've got things in there that you don't know what it is, game
and you
over.
Never know, right?
Correct,
you never
right.
know.
Right.
So in terms of educating kids and stuff, we had Red Ribbon Week a couple weeks ago, and that's always the Just Say No to Drugs week, and kids wear silly socks or silly hairdos or whatever, and it always irritated me, even before this, that we're saying just say no to drugs, but wear silly socks and go on about your day,
Mm-hmm, right.
And even at the elementary level, you can have, really good conversations. So this year I worked with a couple of the PTO parents and we came up with some really good things to say over the announcements. And then I talked to the kids every day, in PE class about things that you're going to be faced with and how hard it is to make the right choice sometimes. And, I kind of equated it to bullying, and you see someone being bullied, and they would come up with like five different choices for that scenario. Well, the hardest one is saying to the bully, no, I'm not jumping on board with you. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to, because you may be afraid that you'll get bullied, And so when they're faced, so I said, that's a really hard, it's the right decision to make, but it's a really hard decision to make. And as you get older, you're going to have some really hard decisions to make. They're going to be the right decision, but they're going to be hard to make because they're a friend of yours or because you're afraid of being put down or whatever. And we went through a lot of different, choices you can make when you get frustrated and mad and angry or anxious, and had a call to action to the parents each day as well. And so it was a lot more meaningful. Mm-hmm. A lot more meaningful Red Ribbon Week. So just even doing things like that, we don't have to necessarily be talking to, like, what grade is your son in?
Second grade.
Okay. I love second grade. I taught second grade before I was a PE teacher. Yeah. The best age.
It's a good age.
But we don't necessarily need to talk to him about meth or drugs. But what we need to talk to him about is, if he gets in the habit of making healthy choices now, both nutritionally and sleep and exercise, and mentally making healthy choices, then he'll be more used to that as he grows older,
Right.
Definitely.
So anyway, that's what we talked about. And what else? I wanted to say last year we had that Team Tommy Day. And so a portion of the shirts at $1,500 we raised for Face the Music, and Tommy's counselor actually came up, and that morning she was interviewed by Michael Moulton and M2 The Rock, and then both of them came over for the big assembly we had for third through fifth graders, and it was really, really moving. And so I interviewed him, basically, and he cheered up several times, but he did an amazing job of talking to the kids about your life being unmanageable. James was there, and he used the analogy of video games and like, okay, so how many of you get home and the first thing you do is get on your video games? How many of you get home and the first thing you do, get home and you don't want to talk to your mom or your brother, or your sister, you just want to get on that video game? How many of you put off your homework because of the video game? How many of you don't want to come down to dinner because of your video game? How many of you stay up too late because of your video game? How many of you... And he goes into this whole thing about how you're not managing your life. This video game thing, it's all you can think about. It's all you can think about. How many of you have gotten on a school iPad and logged into a video game? How many of you have played a video game when you knew you weren't supposed to be playing a video game? And it was a really, really, really good analogy before, you know, and he said that is what addiction does. You know, it takes over. It's all you can think about. And so it was, he did a wonderful, amazing job speaking to the kids. And then the kids that I talked to you about in the first segment that actually, or might have been the beginning of this one, but went to Shatterproof, and it inspired them to do their exhibition project on addiction. They each came up with a question on their own for him. I mean, and they had the most amazing questions for him. And you could hear a pin drop in that gym. I mean, it was just, all the kids were like this, and it was so amazing. And one of the kids went home and told their mom. The mom messaged me later, and her daughter had come home and said, "Mom, it felt like God was in the gym with us today."
Oh, wow.
So it was really, really an amazing event. And
that's what I mean. You're changing a lot of kids' mindsets. And
you know, when you talk to them about it too, they are like sitting there like, just they want the information, you know? So anyway, it's good.
James has to step out for a very important,
very important
business call, but we thank him for coming on.
Thank
and
you so
I wanted
much.
To show
thank you.
Colleen's. She has a new tattoo.
Oh, my tattoo.
Yes.
I actually brought the, so 2 Mother's Days ago, I think it was 2 Mother's Days ago, 2 or 3. Tom used to call me Mama Bear. And so he had gotten me this bracelet. It's a Tiffany Harp bracelet, and it has a bear on it. For Mama Bear, and this was the note that came with it. And I didn't even know I still had this note till I started looking through things, but it says, "To the best mother ever, from the most annoying son ever. Thought this year you deserved something extra. Much love, Mama. Love, Tommy." And then he always signed with a smile face without the circle around it, just dot, dot, and a smile. So one of his friends in Austin, actually, he's inspired like 12 or 13 tattoos that I know of. He used to have Find Peace and Chaos here. And now, I mean, Nicolette got one.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I saw one of his friends in Austin. He had written her several letters. And so she had tattooed on her wrist right here, just in his handwriting, "Love, Tommy," in his handwriting. So I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. That, you know. Well, anyway, I ended up finding this note, and I couldn't think, I knew that I wanted to do that, and I couldn't think of the right place or time or who I really wanted with me to do it. And so I've been carrying it around with me. And every summer I go on my East Coast summer tour. And this summer I was in the Outer Banks, and Tommy's birthday was fast approaching. His birthday's on June 28th. And so I was thinking, you know, again, always thinking about this and how to represent, and then his birthday's coming up. And my niece Madison, who was like his best friend, they were joined at the hips. They went to Old Miss together. You know, we tried to get those kids together as much as we could, even though they were in Virginia and we were in Texas. And they became really close while they were at Old Miss, probably through high school in Old Miss. Anyway, she's in Virginia Beach, which is like an hour away from where I was. And so I called her and I said, "What are you doing on Friday, Tommy's birthday?" She's like, "I have to work." And I said, "Well, you're going to take the day off because I'm going to come up there." And so we celebrated Tommy's birthday like in big style and went and got tattoos. And she took me to a place. And so I got in Tommy's handwriting the "Much love, Mama," Tommy with the smile.
Oh,
face.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I love it. I've never been a tattoo person, but that's
you are now.
Yes.
Oh, that looks amazing.
Do you do this? How do you read this note?
So I brought another one because I wasn't sure if it would be appropriate or not.
Everything's
I know everything's appropriate. But I brought this note because it gave me a lot of peace. I found the note for the tattoo. I found that like really shortly after he passed. And this note I found while I was moving. I just moved in the last 2 weeks. And
I just saw that. Where did you move to?
To the Sound, Cypress Waters. Okay. It's awesome. It's really nice. And it's new, and one of the things that we could get into, but I don't want to get too far into it, but one of the things is someone told me that Tommy said to look for him in the sunrise, and I didn't realize this until I moved in 2 weeks ago. I spent my first night in my new place, and it overlooks water, and it's really, really pretty, and the first morning I woke up, it was a Sunday morning, and there was the sunrise. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've moved to a place where I can see the sunrise every morning, you know? And it like
that's
really
crazy. That's
yeah.
Awesome.
So I found this letter, and the reason I brought it is because I felt like when we talk about parents and you know, we carry so much guilt as parents, right? Because you never think you're doing the right thing, even if it is the right thing. You know, it might not be the right thing. You never think. But Tommy wrote me this letter, and I literally found it in a box of random stuff that I almost, like a Rubbermaid box in your closet, and I almost just dumped the whole thing, you know? And anyway, this letter.
How old is he?
In a box. He's 19. And it says, "Dear Mom, thank you so much for your letter. It meant a lot." So this was while he was at the first place when he was 19. "I want to start off by saying you were never a bad doll or uninterested mom. You're the best mom anyone could ask for. You were present, fun, and always available. My friends loved you, girlfriends loved you, and pretty much everyone I know loves you. You never messed up as a parent." I just want to tell you how much this means, like, as a parent, to find this letter. And I had totally, really had forgotten about this. But I'm the reason I'm sharing it is because I'm sharing it with other parents. If they're going through this, it's not their fault, you know? Anyway, "You never messed up as a parent, and my drug use was never a result of something you did or didn't do. I chose to use drugs. You didn't make or force feed me pills. The divorce was rough, yes, but I wouldn't even contribute that too much to me using. I used drugs to escape from myself. Not that I hated myself, but I had just been having a rough time with growing into my own. I had always been popular, good-looking, and athletic, but there was just something missing, I guess you could say." Like, that breaks my heart, though, you know, because it's like, what could be missing, you know?
Yeah.
Just, but anyway, "You've been with me literally every step of the way and been on my team, even when we both knew I was wrong. And for that, I love you so much. Just so you know, and I love this part, I'm always on your team. And don't think just because I'm young or your child, I can't help guide you in some ways as well. I'm always here for you no matter what. Love always, your Tommy." And look, with the smile face.
So, like, that's a God thing. For sure.
To find this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so too. I mean, especially after the last year. But he wrote that so poignantly, and I'm sharing it because I think I'm on a Facebook group as well that's all parents that have lost their child or their husband or their wife or their parents or whatever, just lost someone to alcoholism or addiction. And you know, I think that if their loved ones could write something to them, it would be very similar, you know? But I think that you get very, very, it gets super foggy when you're in the middle of addiction with somebody. And so it's very hard to see the light. And it's hard for the addicted person to show
what
any
sticks
light
out to
as
me
well.
The most is you didn't do anything
wrong. Yeah, right. Right.
It's not your fault.
Right.
You didn't do nothing.
Right. Right. So, yeah. And I think any parent is doing what, you know, everything that they can. And, you know, there's also the, do you kick them out of the house or do you let them stay in the house? Or do you send them to rehab even though they don't want to? Or do you do an intervention? Or how does that work? And, you know, you have people on that group that I'm involved in, and I can only read it for like maybe 10 minutes and then I've got to get off of it, but that say that them kicking their child out of the house, they should have never done that. They should have never done that. That's what killed them. They ended up on the streets. They made bad choices. They, you know, they got involved in God only knows what to get drugs, and they should have never done that. And then you've got people who say, I should have never had my son come home because I enabled him and he never went and he failure to launch and he never went and did anything on his own and blah, blah, blah. So, and then there's people who say, you know, we had an intervention and that didn't work. And there's people who say, well, you know, they have to want to do it, which is true, but it still doesn't work. Right. And so there's no easy answer as a parent as to how to handle it. I feel so sorry for people who are going through it. So, which is why I'm out speaking about it, because I want people to understand that they are not alone.
And is it at all healing for you?
Oh,
to
yeah.
Do?
Yes. I mean, you know, I think everybody handles grief differently. And mm-hmm. Some people would handle grief by, you know, just staying home. And I can't do that. And I felt like, if I don't speak up, you know, like how awful is that to not speak up and try and share our experience and help others through it too. At least help them realize that they're not the only ones out there.
You have a lot of the whole thing comes through perspective. What I mean by that, going a little further into it, is everybody has the ability to sympathize. There's no one in the world who can't have the ability to sympathize. Very few can empathize. And the fact that you come from a place of full-blown, solid empathy, it speaks so much louder. And that's where it's such an amazing blessing and such an amazing thing that you are being, at times I've said it a couple times, but it's such a brave thing that you're giving people hope who are truly saying, well, this person says kick him out. This person says don't kick him out. This person says this. Right. And you're like, what the fuck? What do I do? I don't know what to do. There's not a plan. I mean, there's 1,000 plans, but which plan works right? And so it's just awesome.
That parents shouldn't feel guilty about what plan they take, because everybody's doing everything they possibly can.
And I can speak to my 8-year-old son. Not, thankfully, he's too young to experience anything yet. But there's times on a totally different platform that I'm like, shit, am I doing it right with my 8-year-old son?
Totally.
I mean, and there's times I feel like I am just dropping the ball. I suck as a parent. And so I can only imagine when you get older. Right? I
mean, God. Do they go to bed at the right time?
Thank you, guys. I feel better right now. Yes. All right, I feel better.
It's true.
Yeah. It's true.
I mean, I have my daughter sitting right there, and she's 33, and I'm still going. I'm doing everything wrong. Like,
how in the world did I mess up so badly? And said, I'm just kidding.
I wasn't going to see it.
No, but it's awesome. I mean, this is such a awesome, awesome thing that you're doing.
The other thing, too, the kids at my school see, you know, not every day is the perfect day for me either, although being an elementary school PE teacher, you have to have your Disney face on pretty much all day. But they've seen me, you know, like something will either flashback or remind me, or a kid will say something, and they've seen me tear up, you know, or they've seen me, you know, I've said, oh, that just, and I'm very honest with them, you know, I'm like, oh, I just, you know, thought about Tommy because blah, 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 or someone just said something, or I'm having a bad day or morning, whatever. And so then they empathize with me, and it doesn't happen often, but they're just so sweet. And I think that even the memory of that and how it's affected me and how they're seeing how it affects a mom is powerful as well. Mm-hmm. I think
it's unbelievable. I mean, we say it all the time, like Marcella and I say, secrets make you sick. Being quiet doesn't help anything. Like, you're supposed to tell your story and share your feelings, and every day, like if you have a good day, you have a bad day, and you go through those days, but it helps others understand you, because if you are not going to share it, like, people are going to go, what is wrong with her today? Yeah. But you just don't get it, and you are more helpful if you do it this way.
Well, and that's what gets us in the trouble of sweeping things under the rug.
That's exactly right.
You know, and worrying about, I mean, I luckily have like a tribe of amazing friends. And so, and I've never been one who really worries about what other people think, you know? I mean, at one point in my life, I was more worried about that, but now not so much. Maybe that comes with age, but
it does.
Definitely does. It definitely comes with age, because I don't care what anyone thinks anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, I think the main thing is to conduct your life in a way that you can help others and, you know, support others and have integrity and, you know, do the right thing, but, you know, and do what you think is the right thing. What I think is the right thing might not necessarily be what Marcella thinks is the right thing. Neither one of us are necessarily wrong, you know, but
it works for you. That's the most important thing. And I wanted to also say something else, though. The way that you and James conduct yourselves, like, you are a divorced couple and you lost a son, yet it seems like you're extremely supportive of each other and your grief that you're going through and the memories you have of Tommy. And I think that that is also extremely important.
Right. Well, yes, it's so important. And, you know, I mean, we've remained friends. We have definitely had our moments, but we've remained good friends, and I couldn't have gotten through all this without him. And I don't think he could without me, you know, and it'll be something that, you know, it's an awful bond, but it's a bond that will always have. And I know when I'm having a moment, I can, you know, message him or call him, and he gets it, you know? Right. So yeah. And we always, you know, I love his family. He loves my family. Our families are still in touch and in contact, and, like at Shatterproof, he's got members of his family coming, members of my family are coming, like flying in for it and everything, and everybody gets along. And so, you know, it would be awful to not have that, you know? And Tommy and Ben used to always say, we're so thankful that we don't have to go, well, oh gosh, mom can't come to that because dad's going to be there. Dad, you know, so, I mean, that's an awful position to put kids in. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yes, we have remained
good friends.
But
still, it takes a lot of, what's the word I'm trying to say? I mean, I know of so many people that are not able to do that. I actually have one of my best friends who lost her son, and her and her ex-husband do no longer speak at all. So they have no communication. It's very hard.
Do they have other kids?
Yes, two more.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Well,
would you say that sometimes people, this is me asking, would you say that sometimes in situations like this particular one, that it's, they just don't know how to get past, it's such a hard sort of thing to get past it.
I think that's why I'm giving her so much credit for it. It's
well,
amazing.
I think though, everybody wants to find something or someone to blame, right? Yeah. And so it becomes very easy to blame an ex-husband or some kid down the street who gave him his first drugs or, you know, whatever. You want to find someone to blame. And, you know, but I mean, James has done everything possible, you know, and there's no way that you could, you know, put blame. And you heard in the letter, it's not like the divorce was part of, and people get divorced every day, you know, and their kids don't die of a drug overdose. So, anyway, so yeah, I mean, we've done a good job. And like I said, you know, you know, when I have my moments, and luckily I have him because my moments can spiral down, very few and far between, but like, I think he's gone to counseling to figure out how to deal with like a rant. But, you know, every once in a while, I'll just do a rah, you know, text message him, and he's like, totally get it. I totally understand. You know, he doesn't argue with me about it. And I mean, in a good way. He knows me. He knows that I'm like feeling hurt or sad or whatever.
You're going through a moment.
Yeah, I'm going through a moment. And he's just always been very supportive. So.
Amazing.
Yeah. You two are wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Is there anything else that you, I mean, it's been over a year.
Yeah. I just want to say that I am not sure how I got through Shatterproof last year. It must have been a fog, because this year I'm like, it seems like a lot, you know, but it's great and awesome. And I can't wait to get out there on November 16th. You know, thank you to everybody who's given me the opportunity this past year to speak or tell our story. And you know, I'm just looking forward to, you know, I've fine-tuned things and I've done so much research now that I actually know more about what I'm talking about, you know, than I have. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to talking to more people. I'm talking to a mother-daughter group in January. And so, you know, I mean, the more people that I can arm with the information, the better. And the Team Tommy shirts have been amazing because they get seen around town, and it enables both adults and kids to start that conversation. So, just thankful for my community and the support I've gotten from our school district and from everybody else, all you guys.
So, I mean, it's just an awesome, unfortunately, but an awesome story. So you guys have a great relationship. Now your other son, how's he doing now? You said it's been about a year.
It's been a year. It was August 10th.
Yeah. So how's he been doing? Doing today?
He took last year off. He worked in Miami and he's back at school this year. And,
how old is he?
He's 21.
Okay.
And, you know, he's surrounded by a good group of friends as well. And he's not my talker. You know, Tommy was my talker. Mm-hmm. Ben doesn't talk a lot. And he's not one of those that, you know, if you say, hey, how are you doing? Fine. You know, like fine in a way, don't ask me any more questions. I worry about that a little bit, but he seems really well. James is lucky enough. He has some business in Miami, so he gets down there maybe once a month and gets to have dinner That's with him great. And stuff. And then Ben's going to fly back for Shatterproof next weekend, which I'm really excited about.
That's so cool.
Well, we are going.
We're yeah.
be Good.
Yay.
Going.
Yeah. Yay.
I made them put it on the calendar weeks
and
ago. So
fill out the
I
sent it to you.
Okay, there's, perfect.
Yeah, there's like four shirt options. Not options for the shirt, but like you can put yours and hers and whatever
perfect.
In there on one
okay,
on one sheet. So
I'm winning the fight though. I feel like starting to.
You know, I feel like too, it's like we as a nation, we as a community, mm-hmm. we as a city, we as a state, and you know, even as a nation, people are becoming way more aware. And so hopefully, you know, it's just who we've left in the dust. Like right. there's a lot of people out there that need help. So,
yeah. Right. Could you hold up that book one more time?
Yes. How can I
encourage
show it so they can? Oh,
everyone.
Yes. So this is the book High by Nick Sheff, David and Nick Sheff, actually, both the father and the son from Beautiful Boy. And it's full of facts. It's full of stories and testimonials and, it's just really, really, really good information for kids to have, but also for parents to have. So,
and encourage as many school districts as we can to put that book in, like make it a mandatory reading,
right.
parent and children. I'm going to try to do that with PAC and get that book in there. And
Amazon.
Yeah, do that. Exactly. So thank you, Colleen.
Thank
we
you so
love
much.
You.
Yes. Thank
we
you
are
guys.
So
much.
Proud of you. I don't even know.
Do you want to give her social media?
Oh, yeah, please. Your social media.
If anybody wants to talk to you.
On Twitter, call 727. On Instagram, call 727. On,
so it's call?
C-O-L-L. 727.
C-O-L-L.
Yeah. Colin. And then just Colleen Michaelis on Facebook.
Spell that.
C-O-L-L.
I couldn't even pronounce it. I was trying to hear. I was like,
and then Michaelis, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-I-S.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
You're awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.